We got a question via Twitter just the other day, and it was one that I had to do a little study in order to bring an answer to. You know, right now, if you're listening to the 3-year lectionary in your congregation, then you are just entering the book of Matthew. We're in Series A, which means for most of the year we're in the book of Matthew, but usually when you hit Christmas time and sometimes around Easter, you know, it gets shifted up a little bit and some different pieces get thrown in to fit with the story, to fit with the theme of the year. But we're hitting Matthew, and we're going to hit Matthew hard. And so we got a, well, it's a good, simple, basic question. Who is Matthew? Right? Nolan, at Matig on Twitter, he writes, thank you, Pastor Fisk. I have another question. Why is the Gospel of Matthew called the Gospel of Matthew? How do we know? Thank you. And, you know, I had to go and look this one up. I mean, I know it's Matthew because it's written by Matthew the Apostle. At least that's how we hold it to be. It says it's written by him. But how do we know that? How do we prove that? Well, that I had to do a little looking on. So Matthew the Apostle, Matthew of Capernaum, you might remember this is the guy who was the tax collector who had been called away from that life of effectively theft. Not all of them were dishonest, but more or less, you made a good living by skimming off the top. That's who he is. And we don't know much more about him than that. But there certainly have been some challenges to this throughout history. So, like, one of the main pieces of why we think this is Matthew of Capernaum is because of a gentleman named Eusebius, who wrote a church history early in the church's years, around the 300s or so. And he quotes, maybe it's 200s, he quotes another gentleman who's even older than him named Papias, who quotes another guy who he just refers to as the elder, who in theory either was the Apostle John or sat at John's feet. And that guy says that Matthew the Apostle wrote the book. And yet, you know, I mean, tradition is tradition, and we live in an age where we don't really, trust that. And so over the last 200 years, you've seen a lot of risen critiques of this. And there's basically four arguments against accepting this statement from Eusebius, and then the statement of the gospel writer himself. Although I guess it doesn't actually say at the start of the book, written by Matthew, and that's part of the trick here, right? But Here's the four arguments. The first one is straight up, you can't trust tradition. There are some questions about other things Eusebius says and other things he says about Papias. And so, well, therefore, you can't trust anything he says. One of them, another argument is that, well, all the Gospels were written anonymously early and later had names attached to them. And then another argument is one based on something called Markan priority, which is that Mark was written first. And so, therefore, no apostle would ever consider using some guy who wasn't an apostle's work to, like, help with his work. You know, Markan priority is Mark was written first, and then Matthew and Luke came along and they borrowed from Mark. Well, since Matthew's an apostle and Mark wasn't, well, he wouldn't have used Mark. That would have been below him. And so therefore, Matthew can't be by an apostle. See how that argument goes? And then the fourth one is that the theology in Matthew is too deep. Jesus is clearly presented as God, and as the argument goes, nobody thought Jesus was God until at least the 200s or 300s. It took a while for the mythology of Jesus to develop, right? That's how the liberal would say it. And so therefore, it can't be by Matthew. Now, we could kind of dismiss most of these out of hand, but let's not. You know, let's just answer them in turn, right? So against the assertion you can't trust the tradition of Eusebius because he makes another error in the same statement about what Papias said. There's something there that's in the quote that we think is probably erroneous. So therefore, it's all wrong. Well, how does that follow? If you make one wrong turn, does that mean you're going to make a second one? You know, if you accidentally spell one word wrong, does that mean you got the whole sentence wrong? How does tradition just ultimately and obviously be wrong no matter what? That kind of broad sweeping claim is foolhardy and really quite arrogant. And so it's even connected then, in a sense, to the final statement about the theology being too high, right? That they weren't quite capable of developing this so early, and that the book was too good to be written by, you know, a mere tax collector. This is just the arrogance of the modern mind, looking down on the past as if all the ancients were a bunch of fools. When fact is, we have the tools they didn't have, but man, I think they were a bit sharper than we were. To be sharp in those days, you had to be like on top of your game, multiple languages, a deep understanding, cross-field depths of study and whatnot. They didn't have the shoulders of giants to stand on that we do. But that's just it. These were the giants on whose shoulders we stand. And so to look down on them is, well, it's a bit scoffing, I guess I would say. So the idea that the Gospels were anonymous, this is something you just got to say, you know, well, prove it. You know, where does this idea come from that they all had names attached to them later because early on they were written by nobodies? None of the gospel manuscripts that we have, which all come from the second century, not a single one of them is missing the name Matthew at the front of the book. Not a single one of them is missing that title there. And these are books that were at that time already being collected and bound together as four gospels, all with names. Doubly so, if you're going to like take an anonymous gospel and put a name on it to get people to buy it, right? To get people to read it, you're going to put Matthew on it? Why wouldn't you put Peter, right? Or James? I guess John was already taken, right? Yeah. So, you know, it kind of falls apart and it comes down to like, well, you know, the burden of proof is on you who are asserting that all the gospels were written anonymous. You need some proof for that. And there just isn't any. It's just an assertion. Mark and priority, this idea that Matthew wouldn't have borrowed from Mark if Mark had been written first, because Mark was not an apostle and Matthew was, therefore Matthew was not an apostle. Again, this is just kind of arrogance. Why would one apostle who is going to write down the gospel, he's got the Holy Spirit, he knows that, he knows he's going to be able to bring to mind all things that Jesus has said, but how does he know that bringing it to mind is not by getting some of it from Mark, who wrote down, effectively, so tradition goes, what Peter wrote down? Right? What Peter was preaching. Mark just kind of wrote what Peter preached. So why would he not borrow from Peter, you know, the chief of the apostles, as it were? Who are you to say that he would have been too arrogant to, like, learn, right? So you see how so much of these attacks just kind of rest on kind of our modern arrogance, our modern pride. On top of this, Mark and priority, while it is something that the vast majority of scholars hold to, it is not a necessity, it is not a requirement, it is not a certainty. I don't hold to it myself. I think that all three Gospels arose about the same time. I don't think they borrowed from each other. I think they held to the same original oral tradition, that is, Jesus taught, and people listened and repeated what he said. And, you know, since these were his apostles or very closely connected to them, they all had the same turns of phrase. Unlike today, where we can't remember anything for 15 seconds unless we jot it down on our smartphone, back then, memories worked pretty good because it's all you had. They were trained from youth. These are guys who would have memorized most of the Psalter as children and been able to sing the entire thing. So I don't think it's required that just because you see a couple of similarities in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, therefore they were copying from each other. I think it's far more likely that they just had the same teacher and they preached in the same overlapping communities, and especially that connection to the early church in Jerusalem. So at the end of the day, then, basically, you have a bunch of arguments against accepting the tradition that we have from the early church historian Eusebius, who gave us a lot of what we know about the early church, quoting an even earlier source than himself. You have arguments against accepting that, but none of those arguments really bear very much weight. And so at the end of the day, there's no real reason not to believe that the book comes from Matthew of Capernaum, the apostle of Jesus, and that he gives us a first eyewitness testimony, eyewitness account of who Jesus is and what he did. So I appreciate the question, Nolan. Hope it helps a little bit. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news. Back in just a moment with our New Testament reading, getting ready for the daily lectionary study coming up at 8 o'clock, Romans chapter 9. Oh my, it still gets deep today. Get your thinking cap on. Have your boots ready. Yeah. Back in just a moment.